automate more, relax more, get paid with less effort than ever. Coming soon, D72. Make sure to visit foolishit.com for updates. Podnuts would like to thank Nick Shaw for his continued support.
Welcome to the Geeksters, episode 111, recorded March 25th, 2014. I'm Fred, filling in for Mr. Obando, who must have won a lottery or something because he went to Disneyland. No, he's on vacation with the family, so hope he has a good time. But I would say that I'm joined by, but actually I'm not joined by, I'm joining Tim Bauermeister. How you doing, Tim?
Hey, how you doing? It's good to see you, Fred, man. It's like been forever, pal.
It's been at least a while.
It seems like forever.
Well, I am the Chupacabra.
You are. You are.
I come out, I'm seen, and then I disappear again.
You're not a Chupacabra. You are the Chupacabra.
That's right. And also, Mitch Heyman, who I had the pleasure of seeing this past Saturday. How you doing, Mitch?
I'm doing good, Fred. I was glad to see you. And it was nice meeting Mike Smith and Carrie Holzman at the Mike Tech Show meetup for his 500th show. It was good. A very good turnout. Everything really worked out wonderful.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up real quick. We, as those of you who don't know, Mike Smith, the Mike Tech Show, who is a good friend of the Podnuts Network, has been for a long time. He had his 500th show in Philadelphia area. And so he to commemorate that, he held a meetup. And also included Carrie Holzman, who co-hosts with him for Tech Vets. So Mitch and I both were able to make it. I had to fly out. Mitch was able to drive up. I flew out on a Friday, last Friday, and then came home Sunday. And Mitch drove up Saturday for the actual events. So we were able to meet Mike Smith and Carrie Holzman, and then just a bunch of other. I mean, there was probably about 40 people there, Mitch.
I would say close to 40 people. You know, it's counting family and some of the sponsors that were there. But it was a good turnout. I think he was quite satisfied.
Yeah, the room was full. I mean, every seat was filled, so that was perfect. But we had a great time and met some really good people, and got to go down to have some Gino's Philly cheesesteak sandwiches. Those were really good. And I think a good time was had by all.
We got to meet Citizen X.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we got to meet Barb.
And I think you know who she is.
I thought that was her in that picture.
Yeah, I think you know who she is, yeah.
Yeah, she was there. And
Russ Wenner from the Techie Geek podcast. Russ Wenner, he's a great guy, man. What a nice guy.
Complete gentleman, absolutely. And on top of that, we picked up a guest for the show, Corey Fruitman, who owns Instant House Call. He's going to come on the Geeksters here in a couple weeks and talk to us. He's got some really interesting insights I think people will like to hear on Windows 8. And we're going to start the show off, and we're just going to have Tim look at him and go, Windows 8 sucks.
All right.
Was that your first experience with it, Tim?
No,
recently?
No, it's not.
Okay. Gotcha.
No, I'm teasing Tim. He has a different outtake on Windows 8, a different outlook, I should say. And so everybody who was there listening to him really, really enjoyed his insights. So I'm looking forward to having him on.
You know, when I was messing around with Windows 8, which was maybe a month or so before the hard drive went up, I had no problem with it. I mean, I didn't do a lot with the Metro interface, but the thing is, you didn't have to. And I don't see what all the complaining was about. I mean, personally, I mean, I didn't have that much of a problem with it at all. I did have a problem because you would have a desktop app for Skype and a Metro app. I'm saying Metro. They don't like to call it Metro for Skype, but that was a pain. I got to admit, that was a pain. I just stuck with went back with the desktop Skype app, the regular desktop Skype app. So that was kind of funky the way that worked. So I don't know if Fred messed with that before. But other than that, really, it wasn't that bad. Because I had the classic shell on there too, Fred. But I took it off just to start, you know, trying to learn, you know, how to do things with the new interface.
Yeah, I did too. I took it off while we were down there. And it was... It's a learning experience, but after you start wrapping your brain around the why, I think it's a little bit easier to use. But let's save all that for when Corey's on, because he's much more educated on it than what we are. But so yeah, that was the weekend. I guess Tim, how you been, man? What have you been into? What's your business looking like?
Well, I actually came today to talk about Windows 8. So I mean that was really, as usual, Tim.
That was 2 weeks early.
That was literally that doesn't matter really. That was the event. Well, you know what? I mean, this isn't in place of our guest. Look, I'll tell you what, if you can get anybody on here who can sell me on this, because I want it to be easy, I want it to work, I want everybody to love it. I want people to have technology that they can use and it satisfies and it's not a confounding mystery. Okay. So, I mean, that's great. What I really want to do is just kind of update my stance on Windows 8. So it's today isn't the day where I come and I eat crow and talk about how much I love it now, which I don't. I still think it's ridiculous. I really feel that my position is the same as everybody's, that unless they've spent a lot of time with it and they've been able to sell themselves on all these new features, Windows 8 is a confounding mystery. We've had the start button since 1995, and everything has looked just about the same. Now, I mean, with every next edition of Windows, they've hidden a lot of the things. You have to maybe a couple extra clicks. Well, I used to click that to get here, but now I have to do that. Okay, but I mean, you kind of figure it out. But it's all very familiar. You can sit down and you can use it. This thing, you can't do that. You cannot take it out of the box and just use it. They shouldn't even call it Windows, because it's not anymore. It's different. Is Windows underneath or somewhere? Yeah, sure. They should call it like Storm Windows, because it's like it covers it up and makes it different somehow. But just to recap, up until like this weekend, my experience with Windows 8 has been, hey, honey, here's a brand new laptop with brand new Windows 8. And I knew that there were some issues with it, getting around it, but I was like, I'll let my wife use it and she'll figure it out and I'll just kind of like pick up on it from there. She could not find her way around it. I mean, there should be, maybe when you first start up, there should be like little hints or something that you can turn off. Like Clippy comes out and tells you to kind of hover over here to get this thing out here and the charms thing and the whole deal. What Mitch was talking about, you had a good experience with it, but that was with Classic Shell running, right?
No, not necessarily. I just put it on, but I took it off learn my way around.
With the original original Windows 8 was that you couldn't boot to the desktop. Now with Windows 8.1, you can boot to the desktop, which is a huge deal, because unless you're using a touchscreen, and I've been trying to use the Tile interface without a touchscreen, just to live in that environment. Sure. And I will say it's challenging. However, it's not impossible. I'm beginning to get my tiles organized and getting rid of the ones that I don't want and putting the ones up that I do want. It's making more sense than what it did originally.
See, I think it's made for, like, I think, Tim, you said the one you just had recently was a touchscreen.
Yeah, I'd mentioned that earlier.
Yes, and that's what it's meant for. If you have a touchscreen, I think the user experience will be that much better. Of course, I don't have a touchscreen.
I don't think that it's fair to say it's meant for that. I mean, yeah, okay. I guess it does work.
Well, because they want it to match their phone.
But it works with the mouse too.
They want it to match the Windows phone.
I do not hate the new interface. I think that if you have it on a phone, I think if you have it on a tablet, I actually think it's pretty nice. I think in a lot of ways, I think it's comparable or better than using iOS or the devices or the Android. I think that all three of those bring something to the table. I don't hate it. On a touchscreen, I believe it's what it's meant for. It's very good. You give me a laptop and I have to use a mouse, it doesn't make any damn sense. So anyway, this weekend we did. Now I'll tell you what, I was amazed going out, since I haven't been sending people up to Staples or Best Buy or whatever to buy a laptop. I'm truly amazed. It never ceases to amaze me how much hardware you get for your money. I mean, every 3 to 6 months, it's stunning how the prices come down and the hardware goes up. We went and bought a fantastic machine. It was a Dell. I think the fit and finish, I think it's cheap, plasticky, but it's going to be. But, you know, the underline, it was like, $150, I think. Came with a touchscreen. It was a 15-inch. Fantastic. You know, I mean, all the typical specs that you would expect. I was really amazed. But the touchscreens are becoming very common. And with the touchscreen on there, I'm like, okay, now this Windows 8 makes sense, kind of. I could kind of feel my way around. I could kind of find things. But it really, there's still quite a bit of time that is required. I think I would need several days with it to start to feel like I was comfortable. And I hold to the position that moving from a mouse or a touchpad to a touchscreen is an evolutionary step backwards. Why should I have to wave my hands about if I can just wave the end of my finger about? So in the laptop, you can kind of make it work. It makes some sense. If it was a touch device, I think it's fine. And whatever these features are, and you were mentioning booting to the desktop, if that's possible, it's not made obvious. I haven't studied up on Windows 8, so so I'm not sure how you would go about doing that. But I still, you know, still bringing up the regular user interface, whatever they do call it. So was it impossible? Did I hate it? I didn't hate it as much. I still think it's just kind of silly the way it's presented, the way it's given to you. Why can't we just have something out of the box? It really is too much to ask, I guess, to have something out of the box that you can figure out. It makes sense quickly. If I hand anybody an Android device, they're gonna find their way around it relatively quickly. This thing, not so much, and it's only made worse by the fact that it's called Windows, and you're expecting something out of the box. And did I kind of make a sense of it? Yeah, but as soon as I did something that brought me to the standard desktop for whatever reason, it was like, there we go, there it is. I would click something, and I go back to my tiles, and I'm like, screw this.
But see, that's the whole point, Tim. Is that that's what you're used to. So, you know, is it different? Yes, it is different. Is it different than DOS was? Yes, it is. So, I mean, it's an evolutionary change. And
but they didn't call it DOS 8.1. They called it Windows. I mean, they actually sold it as something different and better. I guess ultimately my problem is not the product. It's the way that it's being marketed. It's like, here, this is what you've had.
You're right.
This is what you've had, but it's better because it's one more. And now it's 1.1 more. So it's way better, like by a 10%, I guess. I don't know. But it's not. It's entirely different. And if they just had like an old Wi-Fi switch, a physical switch on the side of it, you could just like click and just make it go to the desktop. Like make it the way, and then you could make it the way it used to be. Or then make it go back this new way. I mean, if you could switch it like that, we'd be golden. I'd be set. That's all.
Well, the biggest complaint you hear is, or that I hear, is there's no start menu. And, you know, one of the questions that was raised, well, how often do you use a start menu? Now, some people answered, I use it all the time. That's how I navigate. For me, I never use it. I don't use it. The only time I use the start menu is when I'm going to, like, computer, or my computer, whatever operating system we're talking about, to right-click it and go to properties or to... you know, something else. But that's it. That's really the only time I use it, because all my programs that I use are on my desktop in folders. So I'm not actually going to the start menu to start programs.
No.
So I never use it. So I was thinking about that. I'm like, you know what? You're right. I never do use start menu other than for what I just described.
I think most of us are like that, Freddie. We do what you're doing or have shortcuts on our desktop or the bottom taskbar. And
as a matter of fact, on my bench machine here, I have my computer and control panel on my desktop. I don't even go to the start menu for that. So is it that big of a deal? No, it really isn't. It's just different. And it's going to take education and time. Now, one of the things that I wish we're having this conversation early, but that's okay. If Corey was here, one of the things he would tell you is, in his opinion, it's not going back the other way. There were people that were adamant at this get together that the start menu will come back, and he is adamant that their Windows is not going to bring it back. So,
well, I hope not. I mean, if this is their position, just stick with it. I mean, if this is what it is, then let's just accept it and move on. I mean, we do have workarounds. You make a good point that for the average user, running applications and whatnot, it's rare that they need anything more than shortcuts or tiles or whatever you want to call them. It's basically the same thing. It's very hard to get under the hood, though, as a tech, without understanding it. Obviously, once you understand the process or whatever, but that's all right. I'm willing to be just the crazy bearded guy out in the wilderness eating wildflowers and locusts and complaining about Windows 8. DOS,
eating
whatever it is,
eating red berries, seeing things that you shouldn't see.
What would I see?
You obviously haven't seen that commercial.
Oh, I guess not. You know what? And the other thing was that, look, I don't hate it. I just hate having to use it and the way it's been rolled out, the way it's been presented. I know. Maybe that sounded funny the way it came out. It's
I don't hate it. I just hate using it.
I just hate everything about it, too.
Yeah.
And I hate the people. And I hate
it's
the
not
people.
That I hate it.
And I hate the, I think that Windows 8.1 should die in a fire, but I don't hate it. It's I tell you the other thing too is that it's just too radical of a change. I think most people already know this, but one of the first questions that I get from a lot of my users, say residential, and this person asks the same thing. Okay, what about my solitaire? I mean, they didn't even look for it. They just asked about it.
Not there.
And it clicked. I was like, oh, that's right. Because you know, ever since we got, well, I think that. Windows 3.1, like the last version that did not come with the solitaire, you have to download it. Okay. I kind of get that. I think that was a kind of a clever little thing they did, that everybody's going to want their solitaire. And so this kind of forces you to use Store, which was an amazingly creative name. Thank you for that, Store, to go and download it. So it does kind of get people in, makes them familiar with the process. I don't have a huge problem with that. But once again, why not have Clippy come out and say, hey, if you want your solitaire, you have to go here and download it free. I mean, that would make sense. So, I don't know. And could anybody could probably address this, I guess, when we have our guest. But what exactly is everyone's position on malware software, AV software and whatnot? You know, that's another thing that's kind of chapping me right now is that typical Microsoft fashion, we have a product that I've liked. I've liked it for a long time. I felt like it's done well. It's been very low on resources. I feel it's effective. It runs quietly. It's made me happy, and now it's gone, supposedly. It seems that it's running in the background. It's been rolled into something, the other malware products that they already had, and they're calling it Defender. But Microsoft Security Essentials it no longer exists, but it does, kind of. So is AV software really even required anymore, because there is something that's running in place that there isn't? To me, it seems like, hey, this is a product that I've loved, and now it's just kind of there already. But, you know, of course, the man at the store, they tried to upsell us pretty hard on stuff, and he explained there was no AV software, which to me is a lie. There is.
There is.
That's if you choose to accept that Microsoft Security Essentials, that's now called Defender, actually is AV software.
Yeah, see, if you bought something that came with a demo or something, that it will be disabled. You have to go in there.
That's correct.
And enable it. I had to do that with my sisters.
That's right. We did uninstall the trial version of whatever was on there, and once it booted back up, because I think I got a message saying that it was unprotected, there was nothing running, rebooted, and bam, the.
And what? So that brings a good question, because I have this question. In Windows 8, if you're running, like, for example, Avast or some other AV, is Defender, is it disabled?
That's a good question.
If it's an OEM machine, it's going to if it's an OEM machine, like what Tim said, and if it comes with some demo, it's going to be disabled. But if you built yours, your own, I can't remember. If I had to enable, I think it was enabled. I might have had. I cannot remember, to be honest with you. I mean, what you did it, Fred. You put it on a couple. Didn't you install it on a couple machines yourself? Do you remember? I can't remember.
No, I was just curious.
I kind of had the impression that I heard this. I kind of had the impression that I may be completely wrong in this, but I was under the impression that there's something always kind of running, kind of like there always was in the back. Like there was always like a Defender something running, but it's not something you would rely on as a standalone time antivirus scanner. So I got the impression maybe there's something always kind of running, but the actual full blown Defender, they're calling it now, is not actually running if you do have a third-party AV installed.
Well, Windows Defender has been on since, what, Vista? But the Windows or Defender, or Windows Defender, whatever it's being called now, the product that's on Windows 8 is not the same thing.
It looks the same, though.
It looks the same as Microsoft Security Systems.
Right.
Is what it looks the same as. And Brian, BrideTech09 on YouTube, I don't know if you guys caught this, he just did, literally this past weekend, an antivirus, one of his tests he does. Now, the last time he did Security Essentials, which was probably a year ago, it failed. It came in last. I mean, it was almost like, why even bother? But he just did one recently using Defender and Windows 8, and it came out really high.
It's improvement. Yeah, it's getting better.
So what he said was, you know, of course he got flamed a little bit on his channel, but he said, listen, they've obviously upped their game. They saw the problem and that they're recognize it and they're fixing it. So he's made it look as though, and I agree with him. If you're running Windows 8 and Windows Defender, I think you're safe. I think the average person is as safe as they're going to get. I mean, as far as AV is concerned, but who knows? Time will tell.
Anyway, that was just kind of my update, you know, that I went into it with, I went into it with a good attitude. Like I hate things, but only because I haven't had the opportunity to like them yet. And so I'm always willing to try something again. If it still is awful, then I'll be the first to tell you. But I mean, it was different. You know, it did have the touchscreen. And you know what? I was able to give it. It's the first time I actually was able to give it to a user. And I said, look, this is going to be different. It's a touchscreen. You're going to have to try some things. And I watched them, and they were very comfortable exploring it. And kind of, I said, here, just use it and find your way around it. And it wasn't awful. So having that touchscreen was made a huge difference. And so, I find a lot of merit in the user interface. I still need to be convinced that this is
what you hear from. When you hear from Corey, you're going to hear a lot of things, Tim, that are going on in the background, and a lot of the things that we didn't like about Windows 7 were fixed in Windows 8, but we don't talk about them. And unfortunately, I'm not going to go into all that stuff because I'm going to save that for.
Oh, I look forward to it.
You know, one of the things that I'll let the cat out of the bag on this one, and I did not know this, is that with, you know, one of the the complaints you hear about Windows 8, especially when you're using the tile interface, is that, well, I don't want all these programs running. So you look down the left side, right, of the, when you're in the tile interface,
sure,
or even desktop, and you see all the programs that you used to have running, right? Well, I always thought those are still sitting there running using resources. Wrong. When you suspend a program or change programs in Windows 8, the developer has 2 seconds to put that program into a complete suspended mode. So when you see that application over there on that left side on your tile, it's using zero resources. It's not running. And then I believe he said, as a developer, you have a second, or I don't remember the time. It's very quick. If I were to click on that again, to get that program to run again. And it's all spelled out how quickly they have to do it. And because this guy's a developer, so I mean, he's pretty well versed on this stuff. But yeah, so there's a lot of myths, I think, and we learned a lot of them this weekend. So
those are features that you would need on devices with lesser hardware, you know, the phones and the tablets and whatnot. And so I could see why that would be an important feature they would need to implement with these, and obviously the laptops. I mean, there's more hardware than most people need. I mean, they're checking their mail and doing stuff. Don't need all this, but anything that's going to make it run better, longer, hey, I'm all for it. And so that, you know, that sounds fantastic. I mean, all these great things that I don't know about yet. I look forward to hearing about. Like I said, I don't hate it. I just hate using it.
Can we talk some shop? Can we talk some shop?
Let's do it. I'm done talking about Windows 8 up.
Let me tell you, Tim, you know, we talked about this last
week. Yeah, buddy.
We both have our phones rooted. And I think I was telling you my GPS wasn't working. Well, I was indoors. It was working. It was working fine, okay, actually. So when we went to the Mike tech meetup in Fort Washington, PA, Saturday. I said, well, I'm going to use my phone. I took my TomTom anyway, but I don't know how to use the TomTom to my voice. But anyway, but the GPS works so good in Android when it does work.
Yeah.
But anyway, okay, so I set it up. So I'm going off. And about 5 miles from the house, my phone shut down on me. I said, oh, man. So
It rebooted, or it just shut down?
It didn't even come back on at this time. So I turned it back on. I said, well, let me go into stock ROM. Well, the stock ROM, because we have that choice with what we're using.
Love
stock
that.
ROM is unusable. Just everything crashes in there. So I go back into CyanogenMod. So I said, I just won't have it plugged up. So it's working. So I get there I'm more than halfway there. And then it says my battery is just about to die. So I plug it in. It's working. And as soon as I got to the place, the whole thing died on me. It died. And even though it was plugged in. So coming back, I'm charging, yes, Fred, I had it charging up the whole time I was there. So I left about 5 o'clock. So it's working. And I'm like 3/4 way home and it rebooted this time on me. It rebooted. It was still charged though. It wasn't dead or anything.
Yeah.
But it's kind of hard maneuvering back to where you were when you reboot. You have to get back into it when you're driving. So that's the only issue I have, with this ROM mainly is because, I get these reboots or shutdowns with it. So, other than that, there's no outstanding problems with it.
I am not rooting or ROMing my phone.
No. If you don't have a reason, Fred, if you don't have a reason, and those pictures you took out really came out good with your phone.
Well, the problem is what I found is that, because I wanted to do it just because it's good and geeky, right? And I did it with my last two phones. There's always something that doesn't work right.
Mm-hmm.
It's either audio levels, which I had on my UI, the battery dies too quick. The phone doesn't work right. it just seems like everything else will work great, but then you'll run across this one little thing that doesn't work right.
See, I'm just the opposite.
And it drives you crazy.
more things don't work right in a stock ROM than the CyanogenMod.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I don't have that problem at all with mine. I've got the Note 3 now, and I'll tell you, it just works. Granted, you have all the bloatware, but, I don't, it's all in the app drawer. I don't have it on my desktop.
Right.
So,
I
don't know.
I worked on two PCs.
Real quickly on that. When was the last time that you, did a complete factory?
Remember I lost root? I used that, but you had posted a picture. I didn't have those check marks, so it didn't back up my root. So that was 4 months ago, something like that.
Oh, okay. Whatever. So, yeah. I was thinking maybe that would have cleared out a lot of that. Because you and I have the same device. And I'll tell you what, I really believe that. Because those issues you were talking about, GPS, it's the Razer Max, by the way. Or you have the Max or no?
No.
Okay. All right. It's the XD912, whatever. It's the same device. Right. So the GPS and... I have a lot of experience with GPS in this device, spending a lot of time in a GPS-dependent game.
You mean Ingress?
Never heard of it. So, listeners drop like flies.
The hat is going on about Ingress.
Okay, so I don't need a hat telling me about Ingress for 20 minutes, or whatever he said. I have a lot of experience with GPS in this device. These phones, the GPS in that particular device is just not very good, plain and simple. Second of all, I think the hardware is weak. I've had it side by side with an S3. I mean, the S3 is amazing.
Really?
I have an S3. It came in with a broken screen. It's not a screen smash, but I can still use it. I just tinker with it. And I mean, the two running next to each other, the S3, it's amazing. So everything runs faster. I mean, you go in when you go in and end a running program, it says, "Oh, it might misbehave." And you click OK, and then clear cache. That process takes 3 or 4 times as long with the T. processor as it does with the
CS3. Right, right.
So, I mean, it's obviously that there's a hardware issue there. I really think the hardware is a little weak on these phones. So, and I mean, the battery, it's always been an issue with these. They had a huge major, you remember when there had those recalls when they first came out with the battery issues?
I don't remember that.
Yeah. They, a lot of people had their phones replaced or they got different devices because there was a problem with the battery. So, you know, and both of our phones, I mean, they're really nearing the end of service life. So, I mean,
yes,
I know my 2 years was up a couple of days ago. So, you know, these, the issues you're talking about, I mean, but the rebooting, I've always had that rebooting. You know, I've always had some GPS issues. You know, but I'll tell you what, since, you know, running this Cyanogen ROM that got me from 4.1.2, the Jelly Bean, up to the 4.4.2 KitKat, I got to say that I still have some of those issues, but they're nowhere near as bad as they used to. So,
right.
You know, I kind of wonder, I mean, you and I, we have the same, virtually the same device, you know, virtually the same age, doing virtually the same thing, and you're having, like, you know, some of these issues. I kind of wonder if there isn't something different in it, you know, with yours than mine. So maybe, I don't know. I mean, is it possible SD cards off? Maybe the writable memory inside of it's got some, I don't know, like some defective spots. It's getting old and wearing out. I mean, who knows?
Remember, you use, I use Nightly, and you use a different one.
Yeah,
Snapshot, or something. Yes, I don't know if it's going to make that much of a difference, really.
Yeah.
I mean, it's. I mean, I'm really satisfied with it now, even with the few problems I have.
Yeah.
But even when I did do a factory reset 4 months ago, it was a little bit better in the beginning. But there's a ton of stuff on there if you look.
There is.
I mean, compared to Cyanogen when you first put that on, so. Other than
all right.
That.
Well, it's a good update. And what do you think? I mean, mine will do quirky things like that for a day or two, but then it'll be solid for a week, and then it'll do those quirky things. So, is that kind of the way yours? Once it gets like settled in and it's happy, is it okay for a while? Or
I don't use GPS that much. I mean, just when I go somewhere, that was my main issue. Oh, and trying to get wireless tether to work. I think it rebooted once doing that.
I think I haven't found an application that'll work yet with
the Razer. Yeah, it's
not a
big deal.
But you use GPS constantly. GPS comes on every time you.
I have. I do have it on. Yeah.
You know, when every time Voxer opens up, the GPS starts running and gets your location. So.
Well, I used to have it disabled a lot in the stock ROM, but not in here though.
Well, anyway, it's it may just be I really just kind of chalk it up to, you know, inherent, issues with the device. So maybe the hardware is a little weak, that some of these things I don't know that ever really worked that well. And then just the age. I mean, after a couple of years, I know mine's been through the ringer. So I think that I'm not happy. I'm satisfied with it. I'm not thrilled with the device. But I really think that it's doing I think it's working about as well as it can. And after a couple of years, I have nothing to complain about. So.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I I worked on a couple computers the last couple of weeks, and you guys know the story about the laptop and the Toshiba laptop, and I got it cleaned, and his host files was all jacked up. I cleaned it up. Anyway, I told him about. He said it's been working fine, so I told him about Roadkiller. That's a nice program because I was working on his desktop, and that's the only thing that worked to get this one. This desktop cleaned up. Anyway, so I told my buddy about it. So he went to download it. And obviously, he didn't download the right thing. He said he was getting all his stuff and it got it messed up. So I said, we'll bring it in today. So at lunchtime, I cleaned it up. It was founding. It was actually kind of doing what it was doing before. It was just redirecting back to his PC. But I saw in his, the page that was set for Google Plus. It had conduit in there, so, you know, but I use Roadkiller and actually Hitman Pro, and it found the same thing and deleted it. So why did one find it? You figure if the one find it, why did the other one? So I'm hoping it's clean. I mean, I had it working good. I cleaned all the temp files. I mean, the temps and the local user and those folders there. I threw away, deleted some programs that look kind of, as our friend would say, dodgy. Yeah, you know who I'm talking about,
yeah, Fred.
Because they did. I mean,
it's a great one.
He started having these problems in like middle of last month. So, and that's when it was the date it was from. And so I had to start deleting him. I didn't see it associated with anything and his, you know, add or remove programs. And I'm hoping it's going to be all right now. And then with this other computer I had, their main problem was actually why they gave it to me. It was a HP Slimline desktop. It's I think it's a P, like maybe a lower end Celeron dual core. It's got, you know, Windows 7, 64-bit, 4 gigs of RAM. But they could not get it to go on. It was shut down. They couldn't get it to come on. And I didn't have that problem. So I told them, well, if you have an issue, just unplug everything, press the power supply button in for 20 seconds.
Yeah.
See, you know, because it's a lot of these low-end power supplies.
Anyway, oh, sure. Drain the caps and...
Yeah, so I'm not, you know, I mean, I didn't look into inside of it. Maybe I should have. But anyway, because I didn't have an issue. It's starting up every time with me. But the issue was, you know, I want to look at some things. I'm opening Windows. It's just taking a really long time. I want to look at the adapter, the settings in the adapter for the NIC. And it would take like 5 minutes to open up. And if it did, something wasn't right. And then I noticed Security Center wouldn't run. Couldn't get that to open. I tried to run Junkware Removal Tool. I got server execution error, and that would hang from there. That wouldn't run. So these things weren't running. You know, something's not right on there.
Yeah.
And nothing is picking it up. And I mean, the resources are real low. And, so, you know, I did rkill, malware bytes in chameleon mode, and it's not finding any. Everything's clean. And, so let me try Roadkiller because I think, Brian and I think Carrie also, they recommended it. And, sure enough, I found like 6 or 8 registries. And if you look at the registry real quick, I mean, it's telling you what the problem was. It was telling these services not to run. So, and there was Norton's on there. I even installed that thinking that was causing a problem. It didn't. But as soon as I ran that, Roadkiller and
Roadkiller. Yeah. That's, I love the name. It's a fantastic name.
Yeah. As soon as I removed those registry entries, everything started working. And it's been all right.
How'd you come onto that program?
Well, I think I'm going to use it years ago. Remember that before when you couldn't get into, you get those ransomwares and you could get into safe mode, but you had to run these programs to kill. I think I used to use it like rkill and roadkill back then, but it's different now. It looks like it's got a Windows interface and you start running it. I don't know if you ran Adware Cleaner. It's something similar to that. It's got these different tabs. It's got a registry tab. Your host file tab, I think a boot up tab, your browser tab. So the only thing you found was in the registry, those registry entries. And I took them out and let it delete it, and it was fine.
You know, I've come across that so many times where the machine is, it's like, it's clean. I mean, all the scans are like, oh, you know, it's clean, clean, clean. And it's not like it didn't find anything because, you know, there's something malicious running, but it's obfuscated somehow and the scanner just can't find it. For all intents and purposes, it's quote unquote clean,
entries were not fixed.
But Windows remains broken. I mean, core functions, you know, like start, right click on computer and click properties, nothing happens. You know, it's like, you know, just these basic things, these services, Windows Update. Well, Windows up, the service isn't running. You go in the service, and even there. You know, and it's like, I mean, it's like, well, I wish I'd known to do a reinstall 10 hours ago or whatever. It's, you know, now that I'm on this quest. And so I'm fascinated to hear this, that, you know, it may be something as simple as, hey, finding these services that have been instructed not to run, you know, flip the switches back on them. And
see, in my case, it wouldn't turn on in my case. And some of them were grayed out. Because I went in there to try to turn them back on.
Right,
they
were not turning. But from the Roadkiller, you were able to.
Yeah, it turned everything back on. Everything was working. Yeah.
Right, there you go.
So, and, don't know. And then there's another program, tweakingwindows.com. There's a utility there that can fix a lot of your, re-register your DLLs and all that stuff. And that's probably not a bad tool to run either after you get this stuff. I think that might have been some of the issues. But I was surprised that Malwarebytes didn't catch anything on that one. Really surprised, doing a long scan.
Are you still booting into safe mode and doing much from there, Mitch, on these cleanups?
It's 6 and 1/2 to others the other. Okay. Yeah, I do, thinking that maybe, but then I think sometimes you want to do it while Windows is running, while these bad things are running in the background, so it can stop it. So, but I'll go back and forth. I might do the same thing on both. You know, okay. I may run it once in Windows and go in safe mode. And
yeah, I mean, at one time that was almost. I mean, it was almost routine. Boot in safe mode. You run a host of programs to do this, that, and the other, and then you could boot normally. And let's just.
But I've been doing that chameleon mode a lot lately in Marabytes, just in case.
Have you? Okay, just in case. It's not been.
Yeah, it's still running in Windows, but I do it anyway, thinking that, well, maybe I'll find something different. Well,
I remember Malwarebytes being described as a program that actually is more effective running in normal mode because it actually catches things that are running that wouldn't be running in safe mode. So, I mean, I always made sure to run it in after booting normally, but it always seemed necessary to run in safe mode first, you know, to run the RKill and the other things, just to get Windows running well enough that you could. But I was just wondering what your experience has been, you know, the last so many months. Would you say, I mean, a lot of these programs seem to do well booting normally and getting a lot of these things out without having to boot. I mean, it's still a very good thing to do if necessary, but it doesn't seem to be as necessary as it used to.
See, I'm getting to the point where, you know, I'm using, you know, Maura, but maybe four different programs, and one or the other finds something that the other doesn't. Well, how do I know if I didn't try four more programs? They're not going to find something that the other four doesn't. You know, it's just like, you know, you're never 100% sure. I mean, you can go by the way the system's running, you know, the feel of it, you know, if it's running snappy.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's just, you know, where, you know, I can understand why some people say once you're infected, you can never clean it. You never know 100% sure if it's clean. But
once it feels right in the seat of the pants, a lot of times those things they find. I mean, when you agree, they're just artifacts, so they're just, you know.
Yeah, some of them are artifacts. Like this, the thing, the registry entries, there was no infections on there, but they were not fixed because, you know, whatever clean, I think I cleaned this up a year ago, whatever, the same machine, it didn't fix the registry entry, or they got some other problems or whatever, because I think they do run stuff, but it doesn't always fix things that they're, you know, like a little stupid little registry entry or, you know, reset what it broke, and I don't know.
Well, that's actually a very, very good point, in that a lot of times removing the infection, it's only part of the job that, you know, the infection's running and it's doing these malicious things, and so you remove it and ta-da. But a lot of these things actually break Windows along the way, that, you know, part of what it does is disable these things and
I think Fred probably knows this. It doesn't D7 have a thing in there that fixes, re-registers everything?
Right? Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, so it's a good thing to have. You know, I haven't messed with it lately. But, and you know, there's different, like I said, tweakingwindows.com. So
that, and I think a lot of times when a machine just still didn't feel right, it never hurts to run...
Combo fix?
No, the... system file checker.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, I was going to do that. I was going to do that on this one the other day if Red Killer didn't fix it. Yeah.
So that's a command prompt.
Scan space dot slash SFC something like that.
It's a command prompt with administrative rights, and it's SFC forward scan slash now. Scan now, SCAN.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And anyway, that just kind of goes through and scans. That it probably is going to pick up on those broken registry entries like you had, but if there are Windows files and components, you know, core stuff that's broken or, you know, gone or whatever.
One time I had it work. Most time I use SFC. One time it picked it up on a machine, and sure enough, it was corrupted. And I had to find the DL, so I found it somewhere online, and I put it back, and it worked.
I've had it fix many things, and I'll tell you what, I think there are plenty of machines that.
Well, it didn't fix it. Scan. I had to get the file. I had to find it. It told me what was broken, but it doesn't download it. You have to go find it,
was that an XP machine?
It was an XP machine.
Yeah, okay, and so an XP was different. That with starting with Vista and on, XP would always request disks.
Right.
You know, that hasn't happened since Vista. It's all kind of self-contained. So
okay,
I think that was a huge improvement. But I've had many machines that come in that running that scanner. I don't think it's unusual for a machine to come in that doesn't need, that it doesn't find something, even if the infection doesn't cause it. Just over time, I think some things do kind of tend to get broken. So, you're never going to, in my experience, you're never going to run it and have it break something, but very often it does find something. It is kind of, I think it's a good tune-up measure. So, I love it. Did we lose Fred?
I'm sure he's around. Have you been working on anything lately?
No, I'm here. Sorry.
I kind of wanted to, I set up that new machine, the Windows 8 machine for the customer. I didn't want to bring this up, but I did have a, only because I left the screenshots on my other computer, but I did deal with a Java exploit. And so I finally saw some things that I've always kind of wondered about. So I think I'm going to have to save that for next week. What a great cliffhanger. I'm sure everybody can't wait to come back and hear about my screenshots of a Java exploit. Gosh,
well, I'm such a
nerd. I'm disgusted with myself by what a nerdy thing that is to get excited about.
Well, in that HP, I did have another problem. I thought it was all fixed. And I tried to run, I checked both browsers, Chrome and Internet Explorer. I couldn't get video to play in Internet Explorer and on YouTube. It would play for a second to stop. And it would give you that error, try back in 30 minutes or something like that. Oh, man. And it's working fine in Chrome. Oh, man. So I went and uninstalled it, reinstalled it. Used the old version 10. And so long story short, I had to clear out the cache on Adobe Flash. I deleted everything. Once I did that, it worked. It was working fine.
Fred,
I got a problem.
What's up?
I have a problem.
Me?
And we're going to go to the computer.
What's going on?
Well.
What's up, buddy?
I just got a computer in, right? This is going to be live on the air. We're going to fix this bad boy. It's an Acer Aspire, a few years old. It's a Walmart special. And no video, okay?
Yeah.
So you turn it on, the lights all light up, the fans spool up, but there's nothing on the screen.
Okay.
And it's not like an inverter, you flash a flashlight. There's nothing, zero, nada. Plugged up an external monitor, nothing on the external monitor. So I just literally got it in. So I'm actually troubleshooting as we speak, but I did Google it, and there are people saying that.
I got an answer for you, but go ahead.
Oh, no, no. If you got the answer, I'll stop. Oh,
I have now, a lot of answers.
I had the same issue, Fred. I thought the board was bad. One of the sticks of RAM was bad. I played with the six. Well, Tim recommended it. Timster. I took a stick out. Bingo! It started right up, and that stick was
now,
bad.
The computer wouldn't start, or the video wouldn't.
It started. I didn't get nothing on the screen. I mean, everything powered up. Yeah, I mean, it's worth a try. But I was getting a blinking.
Right, it's worth a try.
I mean, the keyboard. I was getting this blinking thing on there, like a code. And
I'm not getting anything like that.
Well, it may be, your video thing, or more videos fry, but in my case, it was a bad stick of RAM.
Well, I did a little research and just before the show here and on Google and the tech's best friend, and there's a lot of people saying they're calling it the Acer Black Screen, and I watched a few YouTube videos.
That sounds like it.
And they're saying. They're saying that. Now, get this. Does this make any sense to you at all? This guy did a whole. There's actually three or four videos on YouTube about this. Updating the BIOS, and that fixes it.
That, okay. Well, that's.
You can't see to get into the BIOS.
Well, you have to put it on a USB stick on a boot and make it bootable. And it, so that it boots straight to the USB stick on and it runs
automatically, right?
But really,
that would be one of the last things I would try.
Well, it might be one of the first things I try if you're going to have to tear the board apart. Well,
I've already got it torn apart, but the other one was a CMOS battery, which again,
well, that's an easy fix too, though.
Well, it's one of those stupid ones that's like soldered.
Oh, is it really? Oh.
Okay, so yeah, when you get a laptop in with no video, I think we all agree a pretty standard operating process is as it's booting up, do you have no video? Sometimes you can see it, you can barely make it out, but it's just super dim. Okay, that is where the screen's working, but you don't have the backlight, right? Okay, so like I said, I think we all. I'm just kind of reviewing this for myself and everybody. Okay, so
no, go ahead.
So can you see it? But it's dim, and you say no. Okay, so that to me is either that tells me that we're getting nothing to the screen. So of course, if it's very dim, the next step isn't a bad step, but you plug it up to an external monitor, right? With these laptops, I mean, it's always like your next step, the external monitor. Do you have good video there or not? A lot, you know. 9 times out of 10, you usually do, right? Because it's usually a screen issue or something. If you have good video at the monitor, your external monitor, that tells you that there's an issue with the screen itself or the inverter. The inverter, it's kind of like, a ballast that fires a little fluorescent tube. Basically, the backlight is nothing more than imagine a fluorescent tube, roughly about like a piece of, a length of uncooked spaghetti. I mean, that's basically what it's like. And it's just about as brittle. So, but if you have nothing and doesn't fire the external monitor, now you got problems because that usually doesn't end well. Would you agree? A lot of times you have something serious with the main board, which is where the, or in a very, very rare case on a laptop, you may have a GPU. A separate video, actually like a video card that's bolted to it. That's very rare. That's going to be a high-end system. But otherwise, that GPU is going to be on board, main board, and that's usually that has failed. I mean, you may have some other something really strange, like if it's been damaged. Obviously, on these laptops, one of the first things I do is inspect it for abuse or if it's been dropped or something. Maybe something really weird happened where the actually, I had one come in recently where, a laptop only opens so many degrees, and so if you force it too many degrees past that, if you like to lay it out flat, that will break things inside of there. And so we had an issue like that. The cable in between the two might be damaged somehow, but generally, it's if you have nothing on board and you have nothing on the external monitor, you probably. It's not unusual to have something bad to happen to the main board. So,
so you think the so you think the whole BIOS update? Really? Should I even try?
Not feeling that. And I'll tell you what: once you get to that point where it's like, okay, it doesn't look like it's the screen itself. It's your next step is to start pulling components, which is what Mitch is talking about. Basically anything with a laptop, if it's acting up, you get hardware, one of the greatest things I've ever learned, and I learned it here at PodNuts, was booting from some live disk. You boot up some Linux distro on CD or however, and then you see if the problem still persists. If you have the problem in both the Windows or whatever that's installed natively on board there or the live disk, then you know that you have a problem that is common to both, which is going to be hardware. You start pulling components. And so you start removing components until your problem goes away. If you have the thing completely torn down and the only thing on your bench is the main board connected with, the charger and a stick of known good RAM, and you still have the problem, then you've pretty much narrowed it down to the main board.
Yeah. Tim, do you ever do the, what was it called? What's the process where you heat it up?
Reflow.
Reflow, yeah.
This isn't a classic symptom of a reflow requirement, though.
I tell you what, I have.
Normally a reflow, you're going to have lines on the screen or something like that. It's not.
No, you can. I think you can get it without anything.
Yeah, it actually, It manifests itself in a number of different ways, but both of those is possible. Actually, I did kind of skip a step. And a question I had, and you already answered the question, though, is that if it's not booting up and you don't have, you can't be entirely certain it's not booting up, but if you have nothing on the screen, do you have any beep codes? Do you have any flashing lights? Sometimes that will direct you toward something. And also, maybe it is booting up and you just can't tell. When you plug in the Ethernet a cable, do you actually see that the adapter is flashing? Like maybe it's trying to make some connection. Can you hear everything running? Like it sounds like maybe it's trying to boot up. But generally, if it's, if it's some major video issue on board, typically it's not even getting past BIOS. Yeah, but that's it. I mean, you kind of get the point where you have to just start tearing it down until the faulty component's removed. If you get all the way to the end, you're probably looking at the main. So, and I mean, if it's main board, if it's a reflow, I have done that just to try and resolve something long enough. You know, it's like, okay, it's either for me here at home and it's an experiment, or if it's for a customer, it's like, here, I'm doing this, but you're getting the alignment. I'm giving you the same guarantee they'll give you the alignment store. It's like 1 minute, 1 mile. Okay. This may work for a couple months. It may work for a couple of years, but if it lasts longer than 5 minutes, I'd be happy. you know, and that's how it is, because, you know, there's only so much you can do. You know, to do it properly, it should be reballed, and that doesn't even make sense anymore in this day and age. No. Hardware's too cheap. So, which is unfortunate, because we had some great, you know, the whole reballing thing, I think was, those guys were masters. And
you remember him, Laffy? You remember Laffy?
He was the best. And
he don't even do it anymore. He's not into computer. He's an actor now, I think, or does movies or something.
Well, I'm an actor. I act like I prefer. But no, I loved having.
Yeah, you're Pittsburgh dad.
No. I'm a Pittsburgh dad, but I'm not the Pittsburgh dad. I got a dad Italians and so, but the. But anyway, I mean, where are you at with this right now? What are you going to do? It's like, I don't know. Flashing the BIOS is spooky when you can actually see the screen. I would at this point, I would feel like just pulling components until I was satisfied that there was something specific to the main board. And if it,
well, you know what I should have done? I should, you know, and I didn't do it, is I should have tried to boot to a CD. I don't know why I didn't do that.
Well, just you know, if you're not getting nothing on the pre.
I know, Windows. But still, I should have still tried it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to hurt. But I mean, you can try the one stick of RAM too. And but
I will try that next, and then, you know, I'm going to do the. I'll do, because I'm, like I said, I've already got it torn apart. I'm going to I'll start pulling the RAM and changing the RAM out, and you know, I haven't really had a chance to inspect the cables yet, to be honest. I did have a little Dell, one of those little Dell Minis that lost the screen, and it was the cable. The cable had actually come unplugged.
Wow.
Mm. Yeah, the video cable. Yeah. It was actually mine. But, as you all know, I'm not exactly gentle.
Well, I was going to say that sounds like user error, and now I know it was.
There's a reason I have a very heavy duty laptop now, because I'm hard on them.
You know, Fred, I couldn't use that. You had that thing turned off where you can't, you like my. My Toshiba laptop, I can use the pad there and then hit it hard. Enter. You can't do that on yours.
Tap click drives me nuts.
Oh, I
got big old fat fingers.
I got to use a mouse anyway, even on a keyboard. I mean, a laptop.
But yeah. No, good tips, people. I like it. I'm going to, I'll try those.
Good show.
Yeah. I think we should do more of that on here, like live. You know, trial and error, whatever we're trying to call it here.
The
diagnosis. I'm sorry,
Brad. We haven't had you on here in a while. Can we get your take on this whole Malaysian airplane deal? I'm fascinated to know what you have to say about. And of course, since our last show, they have come out and said this thing went down the ocean. So, could you just kind of you have a unique perspective to this?
Yeah, change the subject. Wow. You know, I really don't have a unique perspective on this, Tim. I wish I did. All I can do is guess like everybody else, right? I mean, what do I know? I don't think it was aliens. Pretty sure about that. The plane was, in my opinion, the plane was hijacked. And it was either hijacked by the crew or somebody else. And they flew it until it ran out of gas, is my guess.
Boy.
Because they flew it until it ran out of gas, I suspect it probably wasn't the crew flying the plane. Because if they were going to hijack the plane, I mean, unless it was the whole, you know, and I don't want to use, you know, religious things, but, you know, unless it was a religious thing, you know, where they were killing people for the sake of a religion.
Right.
Which has happened, but I'm not feeling that. I honestly think that the plane was hijacked and... You know, the hijackers tried to go further than what the plane would go. Or they just killed everybody and the plane flew until it ran out of gas and then crashed. I don't know.
You're saying it's the difference between having some religious gain and financial gain. This was a financial gain thing, probably.
No, I don't think so.
Did they confirm? Hijack it? Did they actually confirm it, Tim, that it did land?
I
think it's all but confirmed. Well, I don't think they've come out and said it yet.
Thought that I saw where Malaysian officials had come out and said the thing went in the ocean. That was the headline.
I think what's happened is they've come out and said it went down in the ocean, but we can't prove it yet.
Well, and that's
why everybody's so upset.
That's the thing is that, yeah, it's still a mystery in a lot of ways.
It is a mystery. So, and, you know, unfortunately, we probably will never know what happened to it, unfortunately, because, you know, who knows if they'll be able to find the flight data recorder or, you know, the cockpit voice recorder. I mean, it'd be great if they could, because then they could figure out what happened. But
have to find something, you know, first. You say you don't have a unique perspective. We speculate about this the last couple of weeks, and so from what you just said, that it doesn't make sense for the crew to fly it out of fuel. They would know what it can and cannot do.
Well, and you would think if the crew was hijacking it for the purpose of crashing the plane, they wouldn't have flown it as far as they did, right? They would have just crashed it then, you know, shoved the nose over and be done with it. But that's not apparently what happened. Apparently, it turned, you know, everything was shut off. The ACARs, the transponder, those were all shut off. So, but then that would take a sophisticated hijacker to know that those things. Of course, now you don't have to be sophisticated because CNN's told everybody how to do it. But you know, who knows? I don't know, but I mean, that's just my suspicion.
Can I ask you something else? What went wrong here? How can a plane with 239 people on board, a 777, just go away? How can that be?
I can answer that a little bit.
I mean, visually, at least with radar and all the satellites and everything. That's my question.
Well, chances are it wasn't being tracked on satellite.
Okay.
Actually, I know it wasn't being tracked on satellite. Now, we do have satellite tracking, but it's not fully implemented. It's very easy. You have a thing on the airplane called a transponder, and what that does is you put a code in this little thing, and it transmits when the radar sweep from air traffic control hits the airplane. You know, it's called interrogating. So it interrogates that transponder. So it's already been pre-programmed into the computers that this code, 2451 or whatever, is this flight. And then that transponder will tell the radar sweep, I'm at this altitude, I'm going this fast, and blah, 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 blah. If you turn that off, now what happens is when the radar sweeps by, it knows there's something there, right? Because it has a return just from the metal itself. But there's no data associated with it. So we call that a primary target. So a lot of times you'll be flying in somewhere and the controller will tell you, you know, use caution, I'm getting a primary target at your 2 o'clock, 5 miles. I have no idea how high it is. I mean, it could be 5,000 feet above you or at the same altitude. But it's just a primary target. So now in the States, it would be very difficult because there's so many radars that all these radars would be hitting this primary target. So they could probably track it just based on a primary target, if they wanted to, in hindsight. But now over there, over the, you know, Indian Ocean or over the Sea of Japan or wherever they were initially, I don't know what the radar situation is, but I imagine it's limited at best.
Gotcha.
Once you get out over the Indian Ocean, once they turned around and got back out over the Indian Ocean, went back over Malaysia, there's no radar. There's no radar out there. So who knows where it went?
I had no idea that something like that could get lost, just as a matter of course. That I was under the impression that, well, actually, let me ask you this question. A 777 in the air going...
Squirrel! Sorry.
A 777 in the air.
This computer repair show has really been derailed.
No, no, no. I mean, this is a tech question. A 777 in the air that's not going where it's supposed to be going. At what point does it become come to the attention of our military and we know where it is and what it's doing?
Well, that's kind of apples and oranges. I mean, if it were coming into the States, that would be different. Because, like I said, we have radar, we have sophisticated radar that would, even if you had your transponder turned off, the military radars or radar systems and just regular radar systems, they would know it's there. And, you know, they'd scramble fighter jets on it and everything. So, I mean, it wouldn't, you know what I mean? Does that make sense? Does that answer your question?
Yes and no. And I guess that's my question is that, you know, with just with the nature of everything, especially since 9/11, where before 9/11, it would be nobody imagined such a device being used as a weapon. But now it is. And so I guess in my own mind, I was surprised to hear that this thing was out there, this giant missile, and that nobody knows where it was. I was under the impression that when something like that got that lost, or where you had those conditions where it was transponders are off or disabled, or that basically there's this giant missile and who knows where it's going, that we would be aware of these kinds of things. And I guess my question is, well, if not, at what point do we become aware? Do we make ourselves aware of it?
Well, I mean, the answer is we don't. I mean, if it's in that part of the world, we're not tracking, you know, low flying airplanes in that part of the world.
Okay, so you're saying that there is a point at which, if it were to enter a certain range of the United States, and it would then be considered a threat, and then it would be on our radar, and we'd be aware to do something about it.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, just like with the drug intervention radar we have. You know, if you go down to like the borders, like down in New Mexico, and I think there's one in Key Largo, or not Key Largo, down on the Key West. They have these balloons on a tether that have radar that will pick up low flying airplanes. So if you're flying 500 feet off the water, these bad boys will pick you up. So, but again, if you're out over the middle of the ocean, excuse me, one second. Excuse me. If you're out over the middle of the ocean, there's no radar in the ocean. So that's why I'm saying if you're out there, or you're in a remote part of the world, there isn't radar. So they don't know you're there.
Okay.
And we are going to a system that's called ADS-B. I don't want to get into a big geeky thing on it, but basically the transponder is now interrogated by satellite. So you will be tracked wherever you are in the world via satellite through this ADS-B system. I believe they're using it in Alaska, but it's very expensive. It hasn't been fully implemented yet, or implemented at all, really. But it is coming.
Okay. I'm just fascinated by this, that, I mean, there were probably 239 cell phones on that airplane that could have been tracked. No?
Well, no. I would imagine they were probably off by and large. You know, once you're at, 35, 40,000 feet, you're not going to get a cell phone signal. So, you know, they just don't work. You can't make a phone call from 35,000 feet.
So no GPS then?
What's that?
No GPS?
What do you mean? I guess I don't understand what you're saying. There's no, the airplane has GPS.
Yeah, right? Yeah. But the GPS and the phone.
The GPS interrogation is one way. No longer work. Right?
Yeah, that's okay. So I'm just kind of, sorting this out in my mind. All right, it's all fascinating. And it's amazing.
I understand where you're coming from, and it is a complicated issue. And, you know, the experts on the news have said all kinds of crazy things. But the point is this. In a remote part of the world, if you shut everything down, you know, you're not going to be seen.
Okay. And you know what? Yeah. That's what I needed to hear right there. I mean, I need somebody to say, look, the world still is a big place in some places, and that it is possible for this to happen.
That's right. I mean, you'd be shocked. I mean, when I fly to Europe, right? Well, I haven't flown in a few years, but when I did go to Europe, even when you got out over the ocean going to Europe, or you go out over the ocean going to Hawaii, there's no radar. You are separated on the position report. So there'll be a point, you know, fixed points. You get to that point, you'll say, you know, United 252, position Hannah at 2352 Zulu, estimating the next waypoint at 2452 Zulu. This next, we're at flight level 350. And then ATC writes all that down, and then they look at everybody else on their spreadsheet and then make sure everybody's separated. That's how they still do it today. It's, you know, you would think it would be more advanced than that.
Well, you know, and actually in this day and age, and everything we deal with security, is that it's amazing that something like that still relies on honest data from people on board the airplane.
Yeah, that's 100% accurate. When you're out over the water, or not over the water, if you're over Africa, if you're over even northern Canada, you know.
So. That's incredible. I really appreciate that, Fred. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Well, with that being all said, you guys, I think it's about ready to wrap this one up. Let's see. Mitch, if people want to get a hold of you, where do they find you at?
If they want to get a hold of me, or any of us, really, geeksters@podnuts.com. Or we like to have some voicemails. We've been getting a lot of emails lately, but we'll take some voicemails too at 7076-PODNUT. 7076-PODNUT.
Yeah, and I wanted to mention that we actually do have quite a few emails, and we didn't read them tonight because Martin's gone, and a few of them were really specific to, NAS device servers kind of stuff. So we're going to wait for Martin to come back to read those because I think he can better answer them than we can. So if you wrote in, don't worry. We're going to read them. It's just we're waiting for Martin to come back. Very good. And Tim?
Yeah, buddy.
Hey.
If anybody wants to get a hold of me, I am Tim Bauermeister from the G+. I'm in like Tim in the Podnuts forums. You can email me. I am Tim at realpcrepair.com.
Sweet. And you can get me at Fred at jetspeedit.com or Fred the Pilot on YouTube. Check it out. It's very cool. At any rate, that being said, thanks everybody for listening, downloading, streaming, and we'll see you next week.